Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
America, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, hope you're having a great day. We got a lot to get to. Quinnen Williams going to join us from the New York Jets, or at least for now from the New York Jets. There are some reports saying that the Jets would be open to moving their young star defensive tackle. He's going to join us. We'll ask him about those in about an hour and a half. Chris Sims is going to join us in 30 minutes. We'll ask him about the Bears and about what Brian Griese said he was told by Nick Foles about Matt Nagy's play calling. Hey, do you hear this? This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And Nate Bjorken is going to join us. He's the new head coach of the Indiana Pacers. We're going to talk some minor league hoops because he's coached a bunch of D and now G League teams before going to the Toronto Raptors and now to the Pacers as their head coach's first head coaching job in the NBA. We'll ask him about that. So we got a bunch to get to. Jerry Jones got a little testy, Cowboys. Jerry Jones by and large, a little testy on Cowboy Radio earlier today. Plus, some Bill Belichick stuff. We got some Dodger Game 6 preview. Let me give you just a minute or two on the Dodgers, and then I'm going to give my thoughts on last night, what I think everyone is missing about Monday Night Football. And it's not that the Bears' offense sucks. That we knew. The defense has outscored the offense. Tonight, the Dodgers are going to... We call this kind of analytics, but it really is a team staying true to a philosophy, right? Staying true to a philosophy. Know who you are. Know what your strengths are. And it doesn't mean there'll be confirmation bias if they lose and lose the series, that it was the wrong thing to do. There'll be confirmation bias that if they win or if they lose tonight and win in Game 7, it's the right thing to do. I don't know if there is a definitive answer other than I actually can sell you on why it is 100% of the time the right thing to do. Okay. So much of baseball has always been statistical based. Right? What used to be called splits. You know what splits are? What does he hit against right-handers? What does he hit against left-handers? What does he hit with a 1-0 count, with an 0-1 count, with a 1-1 count, with a 2-1 count, with runners on base, right? We have stats for everything. Now, obviously, there are even more refined stats, which we kind of we use under the big umbrella called analytics. But basically, here's what the Dodgers are doing. Instead of using Walker Buehler tonight on what would be short rest and Game 6, and let's just go for it. Just go for the jugular, throw our best pitcher. Yeah, he might not be as sharp, but let's do it, and let's get away from the pressure of a Game 7, right? Instead, we're going to throw Gonsolin out there. Wasn't that good last time, but only in a short instance. Only pitched, 1 1/3? We're going to throw Gonsolin, and the kitchen sink at this game, knowing that if it goes to Game 7, we have our best pitcher on full rest, ready to go. Now, there is a calculated risk. But you do know that there's a calculated risk if you used him tonight, too, right? Like, that's what we have a tendency to do. And that kind of this, 'tis the political season, right? Which is, and this is something that infuriates me about both sides. I know if you listen to the show, you think I'm one side or the other, and the truth is I'm really in the middle. Right? I know who I'm voting for. I'm not going to try and convince you of it, but I think I could pick both sides out and say, like, I hate the way they portray things because they're only telling you one side of the stats. And that, to me, is unfair. Right? One side of the stats is unfair. And so we do that, though, now in sports as well, where we can be critical of the Dodgers if they lose tonight because one side of the stats say, well, you should have gone for it. Game 7, Charlie Morton, he's pitched for the Astros. He's won this thing before. There's a, okay. But you know there is a downside to going tonight. The Dodgers' payroll is prohibitively bigger than the Rays. And where that payroll is spent, granted, there may not be the return on the investment that you may think, is in their depth. And so tonight is a game in which they can flex their muscles and use all of their, anybody who's available outside of Walker Buehler, and figure out a way to get through 9 innings and maybe win a World Series. And oh yeah, by the way, buying into the idea of analytics or statistics or, you know, deep thinking, this kind of modern way of thinking is who they are and what they're about. And frankly, if that's who you've committed to being, I have no problem with it. Why? Well, I don't know what they are. 80 games into a season? Would you do an about face? So don't know what happens with the Dodgers tonight. Interested to see how this plays out. But I think this idea that it's a calculated risk is accurate, but there is a calculated risk to using Walker Buehler, just like there's a calculated risk to not using Walker Buehler. All right, more on that to come. Let's get to last night's game. Ramos, you're a Rams fan. What's your big takeaway from Monday Night Football? What looks like a 24-10 dominant performance in the game?
My takeaway would be that the defense is starting to gel a lot better.
Okay. I think the defense was pretty good. I think Jalen Ramsey has thrown himself into the fray. I love the sale of, like, this is where I feel like Brian Griese is not a young analyst. He has been doing this a long time, but I felt like they kind of got sold, like, well, they moved Jalen Ramsey in the slot because it sets the tone. Like, that's not what you do. And if you saw, he got toasted deep twice. Guys wide open, and Foles overthrew one time and underthrew Bradley another time. Late in the game, when the only thing you should in your mind as a cornerback should be, I don't get beat deep. He got beat deep, and Nick Foles didn't deliver. But I would agree with you. I think the defense is pretty good. How's the punting?
Well, Johnny Heckler is one of the best punters in the NFL. I mean, awesome.
It was
the
awesome.
Last was what, three punts? He put him like on the 5-yard line.
I think it was four inside the 10.
Yeah, he was good.
Was it five or four? Five inside the 10. That's remarkable. Like, okay. So Sean McVay was seen as this offensive boy wonder, right? Wasn't that the sale of Sean McVay? And my takeaway from Monday Night Football is this. There's a reason that people around the NFL have tried to hire anybody who had brunch once with Sean McVay. That dude can coach football. He understands. He's hired good people. He hired Wade Phillips, and then Wade Phillips, he has the ceiling everywhere he is. There's like 2 years, like, and then it kind of runs a little bit stale. People start to figure it out a little bit. And so he moved on from Wade Phillips. And oh yeah, by the way, it was important that he hired Wade when he got the job because Wade was the oldest assistant and he was the youngest head coach. He needed kind of some balance in the middle. It's kind of like when you have those asparagus spears and you go to get a big steak, right? There's that balancing thing. Something that's really good for you and something that's really bad for you. And you balance it out and meet kind of in the middle. So this is now his staff. And is it a perfect team? No, right? Like they're still paying their penance for the Todd Gurley contract. They had to overpay for whether it's Jalen Ramsey. And as great as Aaron Donald is, and he can dominate a game and free up everybody else in the defensive line to do whatever they want, the fact is that you had to pay him more than anybody else at his position, not even close, in the NFL. And there's going to be some holes because of it. They'd have to rework their defensive backfield. Their linebacking core is not great. Like, this is not a perfect team. And I don't think Jared Goff is a perfect quarterback, and he hasn't played well at times this year. He didn't play well at times last year. But in the most difficult division in football, in a season where they've had to kind of figure out, trial by fire, their running backs, the defense is starting to really come together. It was a sore spot. The offensive line isn't terrible, and that's a good defensive front for the Chicago Bears. and they're finding ways to continue to win games. Like, I don't know. My takeaway is that's a really well-coached football team. Right? Figure out a way to win this week and then do it again next week. The LA Rams are 5-2 on the season. Are they a great team? I don't know. But I can tell you this, that the Chicago Bears came in at 5-1 on the season. Their losses are to the Niners and to the Bills, two playoff teams. Right? I don't know if the Niners will be a playoff team because of all the injuries, and I know that they played them banged up, but like I'm looking at Miami next week. That's a win for the Rams. Then they have a bye, and then they'll hop into Seattle. They still have Seattle and Tampa and San Francisco. They got an incredible, like, murderer's row of schedule before they get to New England and the Jets later in the season. But I don't know. My takeaway is there's a discernible difference in the quality of coaching from the Rams and even the Bears, who I like. And I know that staff and I like that staff, but whether it's offensively, whether it's special teams, and like the Hecker thing, I mean, some of that's the kind of luck of the draw. You get the punter, but whatever. Like, they have made some really good decisions. They have figured out ways to win games. They're figuring out a way to make Jared Goff more successful, putting him under center and taking him out of the shotgun. They figured out a way to get a running game, and they're figuring it out. And that's like the two things on coaching, which we kind of talked about yesterday, is you can tell if a team plays hard and if they're figuring it out as the game goes along, how to kind of crack the code and beat the other team. That wasn't a virtuoso. It was a 10-3 game for a long time. Bears were very much in it. And kind of a crazy play on a bang-bang interception changed the game in the end zone. If not for that, I don't know what the final score is. But I watched last year, and Goff was not good. Gurley was a mess. The offensive line was shaky at best as they tried to replace a couple of players. They were working, and they're coming off a Super Bowl hangover. And one of the things about the Super Bowl is it really kicks your butt. Emotionally, mentally, like, there's a reason teams that lose in the Super Bowl struggle so much, or teams that play struggle so much outside the Patriots struggle so much the next year. And they were, if the format stuck, they were from this year to last year, they were a playoff team. And oh yeah, by the way, even without the format, if one play goes different at the end of the Niners Seahawks game, right? Like, they're right there. So my big takeaway is we spent a year trying to convince ourselves that Sean McVay isn't as good as everybody thinks he is. And I keep watching and watching that coaching staff and watching what he's doing and understanding that that team is good in three phases, especially special teams and getting better in defense. And they just figure it out on offense. I think he's a spectacular coach. I think that was mostly a coaching win, somewhat a personnel win with Aaron Donald. He's just a monster, and so it makes it easier for other people to be monsters. All right, there's another side to it. There was something that was said on the broadcast that I tend to believe is exactly true, exactly the way it was portrayed on the broadcast. They're kind of in backpedal mode. But it speaks to why I think Foles is where he is as a quarterback. All right, we'll get to that upcoming next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
This is amazing. Dan Beyer hosts a new pod called I Want Your Flex. It's a fantasy pod. You'll appreciate this one. I know. It does violate one of my rules, which is nobody cares about your vacations, your kids' sports accomplishments, or your fantasy football team. But this one you might. This one you might.
All right.
So in my fantasy league now with Hayes, we're 2-4 on the year. We a little snake bit, and a little bit of it is there's been a couple of guys have been out, and I have not changed my lineup in time. And okay, so it happens, right? And then the one game which I just needed Lamar Jackson to perform at a normal level, he plays the Kansas City Chiefs and looks terrible, right? But whatever, 2-4. So I care about that team, and Hayes and I spend a legitimate amount of time focusing on that team, right?
Yep.
I just got an email. I'm in some keeper league from when I lived in Connecticut. I have not looked at it. Okay. Haven't changed the lineup. Haven't done anything. And my buddy just sent me a text like, damn, you guys smoked us last week in fantasy. I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
I went to win.
I went and looked. My fantasy team, which I've had, is a keeper league, and we're like 4-3. And I literally haven't looked at it.
I can't believe you started Michael Irvin. That was crazy and still won by so much. Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
A win's a win.
That is.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it proves a point that I've said, and I made the point on the podcast, that when people auto-draft, and I'm not saying that's what you did, but auto-draft, you usually have a decent team because you take yourself out of the equation. You take yourself out of making bad picks or reaches because you think this guy is a better guy. It's always drafting the best player available for you, and it's probably a better way to go about things in fantasy football because usually we just mess our own ways up. But, hey, now you've got more interest. You could have Hayes take over that team as well.
It's amazing, right?
That's great. Amazing. That's a great story. By the way, I usually don't care about other people's fantasy teams unless we're trying to help them, but you were right. That is a great story.
Yeah. It's one of those, and I'm not trying to take away from your point because it kind of adds to it. I've done this before with the bracket picks for the NCAA tournament, right? Where, I was literally on the selection show, like, I would challenge anybody to find anybody who knew more mm-hmm. about the college basketball teams, had a better feel, and then, you know, your bracket would blow up and be like, see, Gottlieb, you don't know anything. Like, actually, I know too much. And then, like, some lady who picks it based upon the logos or the mascots ends up kicking your butt. Like, dude,
Oh, gosh.
I really like UMBC. I like the, because I have retrievers, and they're the retrievers.
Doug, in college, my sister got me a job at the law office she worked at as a runner, where I would run documents between, you know, the courthouse, or I'd pick stuff up. And there was a lady in the office with our bracket pool, and I saw her bracket pool, and I just laughed. I said, all right, you have no chance. She picked Arizona to win in 1997. So nice it job. Was, yeah, it yes. was, those Excellent. Things happen all the time.
Yeah. Did you guys hear what Brian Griese said that Nick Foles told him before the game? Did you guys hear this?
Yeah.
This is Monday Night Football. Okay. Take a listen to what Griese says Foles told him.
We were talking to Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I know that I don't have time to execute that play call. And, you know, I'm the one out here getting hit. And sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. And so that's something that they have to get worked out.
Now, since, of course, after the game, Foles said that Griese misunderstood, right? I was waiting for the old Roger Clemens, he misremembered. But no, he misunderstood. Like, look, I've been in those production meetings for an NFL game. And matter of fact, I got into, I handled something. It was actually with Adam Gase. So here's the way it went down. We go to Miami and the Bears. It's like 3 years ago, right? Or 2 years ago, right? When the Bears started off and they just gotten Khalil Mack and they were dominating. And you get there on a Friday. And you go to practice. And so we meet at the Dolphins practice facility. We go out there and we're talking. And I mean, Gase couldn't be a nicer, funnier, like he's a funny dude. I know he appears to be off and weird, but in a one-on-one, like I genuinely really like him. I just think, you know, when you put a guy at a podium, sometimes he gets really defensive. So we're there with Gase, their media guy. All the Dolphins guy, Amendola was on that team, if you remember that year. And Greg Jennings is the analyst, and his last team in the NFL was the Dolphins. So everybody's coming up to him. And we're watching, and they're all talking. And Ryan Tannehill, they're going through things, and Ryan Tannehill leaves the field. So I write down, like, where's Tannehill going? Right? And kind of in comes Brock Osweiler. Like, okay. So Osweiler leads him on 2 minute, whatever. So we're in the meeting and he's like, they're like, look, please don't say anything right now, but Tannehill has something going on with his shoulder and he got hit last week and it's gotten progressively worse. He's just going to get it checked out. He'll be fine on Sunday. Well, you know, we're going to the stadium on Sunday and now all of a sudden there's breaking news that he's not starting. So I tweeted out that kind of what happened. But again, I didn't know that was like, I knew it was privy information on a Friday and on a Saturday, but Sunday, once everybody else had it out there, I was like, well, okay, so here's, you know, my experience, what happened. I didn't know that there's like proper protocol. You're not ever supposed to divulge what took place there. By my estimation, what Foles said to Greasy is probably totally, that's quarterback talk. Hey, dude, he sends in plays and we can't protect and I can't hold the ball that long. Should be pointed out that Foles had protection and missed two wide open deep throws. Greasy should have worded it differently because this is what most guys do is you word it of, hey, I think sometimes they send in play calls where he's not going to have the right amount of time. Foles would never say that. That's just what I think. But you say that because Foles actually armed you with the, dude, he sends in play calls that aren't going to work. But I find it fascinating because the whole reason Nick Foles is there is because he's worked with Nagy before. It's because he's worked with Lazor before. It's because he's worked with all three of their offensive guys. All right, we'll find out from Chris Sims what he thinks about what Greasy divulged in a second.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Chris Sims joins us, NBC Sports, Sunday night, football night in America. Chris, what do you think of what Greasy said that Foles told him?
Oh, well, okay. So there's two things. I mean, I think the first thing is, you know, I took it originally, and, you know, Nick Foles kind of took it a different area when he answered the question. But when I heard Greasy say it originally, and then even the question asked to Nick Foles during the press conference, you know, really, I thought when he was talking about not enough time to do, you know, without paraphrasing here, I thought it was more talking about the play call itself is not getting in quick enough. And maybe I have two play calls to call, and I got to figure it out at the line of scrimmage, but I'm in the huddle at 18 seconds just getting the play. And then what's being asked of me to get into the right play at the line of scrimmage, there's not enough time because the play call took too long to get in it. Now, maybe he was referring to, you know, I don't have enough time to let some of these concepts to develop because our offensive line stinks and I don't have the time to throw those type of passes. But that's what I originally took it as. You know, I feel like Nick Foles kind of answered it the other way to kind of cover his butt with the head coach because, yeah, I mean, Greasy kind of broke protocol there. I think, or at least just from the outside looking in, it looks like that was a little bit of a quarterback-to-quarterback private conversation, just letting him in on what's going on. And, you know, for whatever reason, Brian shared that on the telecast, and now it's going to be a little bit of a talking point.
Yeah, I felt like, and again, you tell me you've actually been in those meetings on both sides of them. That's why you're the perfect guy to have on here. Chris Sims, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I feel like what Greasy should have done was he should have made it his opinion. Like,
exactly.
Right? Where you, it's one of those deals where you go like, hey, you know, look, I think with their offensive line issues, Nagy sometimes calls plays where it feels like Foles, he didn't have the time. It's not necessarily in the play. It's not necessarily in Foles. It's kind of all of it not working together. So it ain't going to work from the time that it's called, and that's a really tough, I've been there, it's a tough place to be as a quarterback. Like, that's how you're supposed to do it to cover for Foles, right?
No doubt. Yes. You.
And now they're not going to tell you anything. Now,
right,
Greasy ain't going to get, no one's going to tell Greasy nothing.
No, yeah, you're right. He's probably going to get the cold shoulder and a lot of, like, you know, under-the-radar conversations or anything like that from here on out. You know, I know Brian Greasy had played with him. He certainly didn't want to, you know, hurt anybody or do damage to any situation that way. And I think you're exactly right. You get information and you don't ever want to kind of attribute it to anybody. That's, you know, even in my job right now, I say things and I go, well, I know the answer. I've had a coach tell me, but I'm going to play it off as, hey, I've watched this on film and this bothers me, or I like this, or whatever it is.
Right.
That's kind of what you have to do.
Yep, great stuff. Chris Sims joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I felt like, all that said, Foles missed a couple of throws. But I my takeaway from the game might be different than yours. I think Sean McVay is a hell of a coach. Like, the special teams is really good. Some of that is just the punter, but you got excellent special teams. The The defense is coming along, and they're finding ways to plug some of those holes. And the offense has limitations, and yet they're still find a way to be effective. And, you know, putting Goff under center more is one of the big ways, running the football and the way they run it. Like, my takeaway is we kind of jumped off the McVay bandwagon a little bit too soon nationally.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. I mean, we saw a few, issues last year with their football team. Certainly, I was one that would go, ooh, I think he might need to at least reinvent himself a little bit, add a few new wrinkles to the offense.
Yep.
I feel like people have caught on a little bit. But he really hasn't added much more to the offense. They're doing the same old thing. It's just, I think, what you said. First off, they're better at running the football. He is a great play caller, sequence of play caller. He understands how to set up plays, and he understands when, ooh, wait, they're overplaying this play too much, and here's this other play now to keep you honest. But I go back to what you originally said, and I totally agree. It's how I started the show this morning with Florio on Pro Football Talk. Was I said the thing, McVay, McGenius, Kid Genius, whatever the hell you want to call him, is just one hell of a football coach. And he doesn't get too obsessed with his offense, even though that's his little baby and his pet project, and he wants it to always do well and put up big numbers and points. I love him because I think of what you're saying. His ability to manage the football game and then at some point just go, okay, you know what? I'm playing a good defense today. I'm not going to be stubborn or narcissistic and just try to, we put up a lot of yards, but we turned over the ball and scored some points and all that. No, he realized the other team had offensive issues. He realizes that his defense is very sound, and he played the conservative on offense, and we'll play defense and field position game against the Bears because I think he realized the only way we're going to lose this game is if my offense screws this up against their defense. And that's where I really give him a lot of credit. He is. He's one of the best coaches in the NFL, no doubt about it.
This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Is Cam Newton fixable?
He is fixable. He is. There is a few little technique issues that I've always seen with Cam Newton come up throughout his career, and he's stuck in them a little bit right now where he gets his left shoulder real hiked up, real high. It looks like it's such a high-effort throw, and I always say this is the thing to look for. If he's standing in the middle of the clock and he's got to throw to 12 o'clock, he's stepping at 9 o'clock to throw to 12 o'clock. That's going to leave you off target. They have issues at the receiver position, as you know. And the game got away from them last week. So then they don't get to be able to run and use his quarterback design runs. And then all the cool passes they have off of it, they have to play a certain style. And that was a bad matchup for them with the 49ers, who can run the ball on anybody. And the Patriots, they're all secondary. They have no D tackles. They don't have great linebackers. So that's where it was really tough. But, I'll say this just to put it in all perspective, because I know it was a bad loss, certainly. But I still look at the Patriots, and I'm not counting them out yet. They had the Chiefs on the rope without their best player. If Cam Newton's there, I'd like to think they win that football game. Last week against Denver, it wasn't like they were physically blown off the field. They just made mistakes. They were rusty. They kind of shot themselves in the foot. I didn't come away from the game going, ooh, there's major issues with the Patriots. There's weaknesses here and there. I knew what they were. This last week was really bad, certainly, but the defense let the game get away from them. It was three and out. It was interception on the first play. It was three and out. And all of a sudden, it was 23-3, and they were losing the football game. And there's no way they're going to come back with that receiving core and Edelman being banged up and everything right now.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Chris Sims. You see him on Sunday Night Football, Football Night in America. You see him on NBC Sports, on NBC Sports Network. I really, really, really liked what I saw from Tampa, but I wonder if more is more. Now, you lose Godwin, you add Antonio Brown, that all works. But does it make them better to add Antonio Brown at this point in time?
Well, it's I understand the question. It's risky and all that. I get it. And there's two things they have in their favor just as far as why I think it'll work. One is Tom Brady. His experience. Oh, Josie, no. His experience with Antonio Brown gives them a great great ability to make that work, right? And then the other thing I would say to that is Antonio Brown's on his last strike.
Yep.
So, I mean, if he screws this up, then I don't know what else to say. I just go, well, damn, I don't know, man. You don't deserve to play. You know, the writing's on the wall. I think more or less, hey, yeah, more is more, more weapons. But they realize they have a Super Bowl team. They've had injuries at the receiver position all year long. And I think they're more looking at it as like, man, what if Mike Evans has still a pulled hamstring in week 15 and then, you know, Godwin has some other issue, breaks another finger or whatever. Wow, that'll really hurt our chances as a football team. And I think it's a little bit of, yeah, add to the weaponry, but also an insurance policy kind of all in one. But Doug, like, I'll go back to what you said there. They're the best team in the NFC. There's no doubt about that in my mind right now. They are. There's really very little weakness with the football team. They continue to get better every week. And yeah, I mean, if you made me pick right now in the NFC, I'd go, the Buccaneers are going to the Super Bowl.
DK Metcalf. You ever see anything like that?
No. I mean, there's not a lot of people on earth that are built like DK Metcalf. That's a special, special specimen. I mean, for him to run him down that way, crazy. You know, I'll say this about the game. Patrick Peterson did a pretty good job on DK Metcalf. They matched him up quite often with him. But I'll blame Russell Wilson more than anything for DK Metcalf's lack of production in the football game. You can't let anybody play one-on-one against DK Metcalf. There was plenty of opportunities during the game where Russell went to one side and I went, man, if he throws it to DK Metcalf on the other side, it's going to be a 60-yard gain. It's going to be a 30-yard gain. I don't know why he wasn't on his radar this game, but that was an injustice to the Seahawks and DK Metcalf itself, to where you just can't let people play DK Metcalf like that. You got to abuse it all day, like you saw Rodgers do with Devontae Adams. Oh, you want to keep playing man-to-man? I'll keep going back to the well. I'll throw bullseyes. He'll beat your guy man-to-man every time, and we'll be unstoppable. And then they should kind of follow that same, you know, formula as they go along too.
Awesome stuff, Chris. I don't know what your child was doing, but I'm hoping it didn't. It was like not like finger in a socket or something like that, right?
No, it was nothing. It was actually my great cleaning lady Josie was about to turn the vacuum on in the room during the interview.
So Josie, 1 minute.
Yeah,
one minute. Thanks so much, Chris. Really appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Be good. I'll talk to you next week.
That's my guy, Chris Sims. Just he's awesome and gives you a real sense of that's the whole thing. Like, you're Brian Griese now. Good luck anybody telling you what's going on the rest of the day, the rest of the year. Who will be the players you remember most from the World Series? We'll discuss.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. This is game time.
It's game time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Buyer.
DB, what do you got?
Doug, the game today is...
Rank 'em.
All right, Doug, rank your updated list of the MVP candidates in the National Football League.
MVP. Most annoying thing about the NBA is when some random dude who's a leading scorer on a bad team is at the free throw line. They're like, MVP. Like, he's not the MVP. This is so dumb. MVP of the National Football League. Ready for it?
Yes.
Okay. At 3, Thomas, Edward, Patrick, Brady. At 2, Russell Wilson. At 1, Aaron Rodgers. Can I give you my logic?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Like, the knock on Aaron Rodgers was he was terrible against the Buccaneers. You know, those two interceptions really derailed them. Okay, Russell Wilson had a stinker too. And Tom Brady's had stinkers. I think Tom Brady is doing to Tampa what LeBron James did to the Lakers. Right? Where, you know, he's not the best quarterback, but his desire and need for excellence and for guys to perform at a higher level has risen. Although, you know, when rising tide lifts all ships, right? That's what he's done. So I think they're super talented, but they were kind of rudderless a little bit. They lacked that leadership. He provides that leadership, which is above that of his actual talent at this point in his career.
Doug, ranked the top three coaches likely to be fired next in the National Football League.
Oh, that's a fun one. Well, they're all going to be fired at the end of the year, I think, right?
Got a bunch to
Yeah,
from.
Yeah. Let's do Doug Marrone at 3, Adam Gase at 2, and Mike McCarthy at 1. Now, my logic behind McCarthy at 1 is I think they're going to fire Nagy. They're going to fire Marrone. But I'm guessing those are like, they're going to wait till the end of the season. I think there's a chance that McCarthy, you know, gets swift boated here in the effort to talk politics, right? Gets swift boated before the season's end in an effort to save this thing, because record wise, it still is savable in that division, and it's just been so bad.
Doug, we could say goodbye to the 2020 Major League Baseball season tonight if the Dodgers beat the Rays. What have you missed most about this unique Major League Baseball season, or what have you missed from the normal seasons that we have had in Major League Baseball?
The fans. I miss fans at three. Okay, fans at three. The stadiums at two, right? Because the uniqueness of the different ballparks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you the number one thing I miss is I love the cold weather baseball. You can go to your mouth now, right? Blowing on your mouth, right? Everybody's bundled up. It changes the dynamic of games. Kind of miss that.
Yeah, I always felt that Yankee Stadium had that feel because the Yankees would always get a night game.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
You'd see guys in the puffy North Face jackets behind home plate.
Yeah.
That's when you knew it was
Marlin Man covering up his jersey in a North Face jacket.
Doug, maybe along those lines, rank the three baseball stadiums you want to visit. You know, Globe Life Field, getting a lot of pub, obviously, because
Globe Life Warehouse I haven't been to?
Yeah, that you haven't been to, that you'd like to go and see.
I still never been to Camden. That's three. Never been to Camden Yards. Yads.
Been to all the classics?
Yeah. Yeah. Where else do I want to go? I mean, I really don't have any desire to go to Globe Life. I mean, it's just Texas, hot, dome when it's hot. Not really. Pass. Let's see. But I haven't been to Camden. I haven't been to the Nationals Park. I heard that's really cool. It's on a classic.
Okay.
And I would like to go where the Phillies play. What is that, Citizens Bank?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Minnesota's still kind of on that list, that new place. We drove by the Final Four and the Super Bowl. Seems cool. Seems like a bad idea to have an open-air stadium in Minnesota, but whatever.
A lot of money, you know, those roofs. Finally, Doug, rank the three.
Yeah, but also it tells you that they don't ever expect to beat the Yankees in the playoffs, because if they ever did, they might have snow. But go ahead.
Rank the three players' names that you'll remember most from the 2020 World Series. I know it may be premature, but.
No.
Arozarena?
Arozarena. Arozarena 3. I like Max Muncy. Max Muncy is, right? I love Max Muncy. And Cody Bellinger. Several females in my household have crushes on Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger!
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is Game Time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jerry Jones was on Dallas Radio talking about Mike McCarthy. It got interesting. I'll give you my reaction and what I think happens next on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.